My name is Josh Nason, and this is the final edition of Josh Nason's Punch-Out. He's back again, folks, for his, I don't know, I keep meaning to look at how often you've been on this show. I'll look that up in just a few minutes. John Pollock thought he had been on 3 times, and he'd actually been on like 7 times when I talked to him last. And of course,
he's
that voice
got me beat.
Yeah, just barely. You're the very first guest, though. So you always have that, that award. Jack Encarnacio, of course, of the Laps fan, Dark Side of the Ring, the podcast Unheard. The podcast companion series, many other projects, Man About Town. Welcome back, Jack.
Thank you, man. Always good to be here.
We're having some talk before about all kinds of things. And one thing came up was the Wrestling Observer Awards, the newsletter awards. You're a longtime subscriber, has actually been a huge help, as many other subscribers have been as well, when I put the call out for needing some back issue help. Jack helped me.
Finally, I had a reason to keep those observers and that goddamn Tupperware thing I have. Because, I mean, it's that period where you don't have them up yet. You know, all the old stuff you can get rid of, but like 05, 06, you know, I was like, why do I have these? There's a reason. And then you emailed me and that's the reason.
That is. Yes, it was. And so they've been going up. So we're closing in. We have 6 weeks away from being done with 1991 through the current day. Wonderful. And so, then the question is, what's going to go up next? And
Well, first of all, let's be perfectly clear what you just said. The reason those Observer archives are going to be complete in short order is thanks to your boy.
Yes, exactly. You should be on the ballot.
Thank you.
For the Hall of Fame.
Thank you.
That'd be quite an honor. It'd be quite an honor. You and Don Callis.
It'd be quite an honor to get 0 votes.
I bet you'd get some votes.
No, that'd be ridiculous. That'd be completely insane.
Will you be serious? So we're very close. So I'm very interested to see. It's up to Dave, really. And there's a bit of a process because a lot of these are not in, any type of easy to dissect document. Like, for example, like Microsoft Word or Dave uses, which is WordPerfect. So there's all these old files. But it goes back to, I think, only 1990 or 1991. And so we don't have anything. So it's a question of really what year he wants to go up next. He's got some stuff in these yearbooks, of course. He's been doing those. There's a chance some of those might go up. I mean, I have influence the extent of what I think we should do. I want to go back to the beginning in 1983, and the yearbooks. That's the yearbooks. And so
the way to hook people over time is chronology. But it doesn't always, it's not always easy, but I've always said, like, the network, like, what are you guys doing? Like, 1981, every show you have in your vault from 1981 across all promotions, format it like a calendar. 1982, you go on and on, and I know it seems like it's going to take forever, but take it from your boys, the Lapsed fan. That's how to keep people stuck subscribing and paying for years and years and years and years, as they know chronologically where we're heading, and they stick around for it.
Yep, I would agree with that. And so, yeah, so we will see. So I'm looking forward to that. Did you, you and I were talking before, did you, some of the conjecture about the awards, as it always seems to happen on social and by people that don't know, that think they know, and people that say it was all AEW and WWE haters and people.
Well, you know what's
and people
about that, Josh? Go ahead. You know, AEW was the best promotion of the year last year. AEW had the best male wrestler of the year last year. AEW had the best female wrestler of the year last year, and that's not just me saying that. Sports Illustrated is saying it, so that's already been well established.
But the some of these people forgot to point out that WB won all the major awards the year prior. I think the year prior to that, a lot of the big ones. And
I was just turning Becky Lynch's thing around on her because,
of course,
you know, it's like you take your pick. But yeah, go ahead. What do you want to say about the awards this year?
I don't know. The awards themselves, I actually don't vote in them because
I don't either, to be clear.
Yeah, and it's just because I don't watch nearly the amount that our subscribers do and all that. And I have more thoughts on the Hall of Fame. I also don't vote on as well. So I observe, from afar. I just think the...
You're an observer, if you will.
I am. The conjecture around the awards is, it's very interesting because I was so fascinated to see how much SI was mentioned on AEW TV. And then you have the Fightful Awards. Fightland actually used to be an MMA website. I haven't thought about that website in a long time. Yes, Vice. Yes. The tie-in, the connection. The SI Awards, you had the Fightful Awards. And it's interesting what, I don't know if they're going to get mentioned on TV this week. I mean, I don't think really care if they do, but I found it interesting how often Tony Khan mentioned the SI Awards. And it was just, I don't know. There's this tie-in, I think some people have the old legacy media that mattered when we grew up, and SI still exists, but if you follow the brand and kind of what it's been sold off and bought again, sold off to VC people, just trying to mine the IP out of it. It's just kind of interesting what people hold on to in terms of promotion and what they think that means.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, all we're left with is legacy brands for media. Nobody's standing up anything that commands editorial respect in terms of, certainly the reporting can be great. There's platforms out there, people busting their ass, but it's individualized now. There's no mastheads that mean more than the individual reporters you have working for the site. And they port from site to site every 2 to 3 to 4 or 5 years. Whereas the Observer is the Observer. Dave is Dave. Dave isn't going to go to something not called the Wrestling Observer. So the masthead is associated with him. Whereas all the other sites, especially in the MMA side, but pro wrestling too, have this sort of shifting identity based on who happens to be writing and podcasting for them at the moment. Yeah. And so I think we're way out of the era where we're going to bear witness to a new brand that's going to carry the weight of a Sports Illustrated. It's just not going to happen. So people cling to that because it's really all the kind of masthead left, you know, that you can associate yourself with in a way that connects you to legacy, and as opposed to just, you know, what's hot in the moment.
Yeah, it's interesting why anyone would want to, I don't think too many are doing this now, but starting like a sports website or like a pro wrestling website in 2026. I mean,
it doesn't even really seem like the move as we've known websites, SEO, ad tech, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Google, yeah, double click kind of format to monetize. Just no, the open web is in a lot of trouble.
Yeah.
The open web's in a lot of trouble because chatbots don't have to generate impressions for the site. You know, they could be nice if they did, but the content you have to generate now to show up in ChatGPT is not the same kind of content that used to get people to quote unquote click websites in great volume to drive the kind of impressions that can finance a real operation. It's much more now just like create blogs that sit somewhere that will tell a chatbot that your content is an authority on the matter. And most of that authoritative commentary and information will be read exclusively in the four walls of the chatbot. It won't generate a click quite like it used to. Thus, the economics of financing a website that way go down. And it never was going to work anyway. I mean, we've seen so many legacy media companies, from the Times to the Post to just your local newspaper, try to replace with digital click advertising what they used to have with print display advertising, and it just doesn't work. Yep. They all eventually go to subscription.
I also think too, and I noticed on our side of the fence that, I mean, social media is just, it's ruined our industry like forever.
Yeah, it's ruined everything.
I mean, we'll put out, and I always look at this. So I'm the one that posts the Weekly Observer on Fridays, and I kind of get everything ready, and I'm very careful to do everything at the same time to give our subscribers the best chance of actually seeing it first. And then, but it's like within 5 minutes, Dave's star ratings are out there, the awards are out there, and you know, if he has news, you have certain accounts to just like go to certain things. It's just, it's vultures, right? And it's just social, and people, they don't, like they used to, they don't care about delving into a story. Everything is so surface level. That's such a depressing thing for our business and really anyone's business that subscription. Fightful goes through the same thing. I mean, they have their Fightful Select. No, so publish something, and usually within 5 minutes, they'll do a graphic about it on social, because by that point, it's out, and you can't retain any of that. It's really just a question of, do you give your subscribers, or in that case, you're giving them like a 5-minute head start on everyone else, or sometimes like a 3-minute head start, and it's out there. Anyone in the space that you have any exclusive news, That's why you see like the, you know, the Wojcicks back in the day and Shams Charania and these NBA guys, they break stuff on Twitter first because they just get it out there and then there'd be a story later. But most people just care about that quick dose, that quick, quick hit of dopamine. Yeah. And I know the news and if I need to know something, I'll ferret later and it sucks. It just sucks.
The dynamic I talked about where now Woj is the first stop and it doesn't matter who Woj works for.
Right.
You follow Woj. And so that's a whole lot of missed opportunities for any company that comes out of pocket to pay for that guy to build a brand around having him under your roof because he's going to move along. Bill Simmons was the last of the Mohicans, and we see the Athletic as kind of like a last gasp for that way of presenting information. Yeah, all that happened is it became commoditized like any product that used to cost, like a television, right? You used to pay $2,000. It used to be like, you know, 10% of your annual budget to buy a TV. And now you can buy like four TVs in a month for less than it used to cost for one. And so it doesn't mean anything to have six TVs in your house anymore. It doesn't mean anything at all. It's not a sign of any kind of luxury. It's not a sign of any kind of sophistication or any kind of, you know, techno enthusiasm. It's just something that just costs a whole lot less than it used to. And that's why you can have more. And that's what's happened to information and the value of information. Especially in a world where people really only methodically consume information if it wins them an argument. That's chiefly why they're consuming information. It's because they've taken a position and they're lonely enough that like that's pretty much what they're going to do to get through the day is try to win an argument with an imagined enemy.
Mm. Let's talk about some not-so-enemies that are going to be fighting in a couple months. And this is serendipitous that you're on tonight. Today is announced that Ronda Rousey, Gina Carano are going to be fighting in coming up in just a couple months in the Intuit Dome in Los Angeles for MVP Promotions, not for the UFC. Ronda said it was pitched to Dana, and they were not interested in doing it. And we don't know if he wasn't. We don't know if TKO wasn't. We don't know the story behind that, but it's, as I mentioned, serendipitous that you're on because, and a lot of people know listening, this is some may not, that you used to be with SureDog, which was it's talking about legacy brands that have changed. And Luke Thomas and I talked about a little bit that last time. It also came up a lot when Jordan Breen passed away last year and kind of the remember when of that he era.
It crystallized that like that actually passed us. Like that's gone.
Like, yeah, it is.
There's no other, like there's not a new one of him. You know? Yeah. Not to say he was clonable, but you get my point. It's just not even, there's not even an ecosystem that could house somebody like that anymore.
Right. And so now we have these two relics of the past coming back. And there were so many thoughts I had on this. I want to kind of get your thoughts on what you thought when you first heard this today.
Well, first thing I thought of, honestly, was that by some wacky turn of circumstances, Rhonda ended up on The Lapsed Fan just a few months ago. We had her on to talk about her graphic novel project.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
She was the one, she gave us the quote about like kind of rolling her eyes when she got matched up with Alexa Bliss. And then everyone who builds their identities around defending Alexa Bliss created a massive, that was like a taste of what it's like to do content and get and go viral, even if just for a minute. It's just like, what a blinding, like nothing matters. It's just, it's happening so repetitively and quickly that you just basically have to put the mentions down for a week, you know, it's just so repetitive. But one of the things she did, I did ask her was about fighting on the White House card. And I didn't ask her that because I thought she was going to. I asked her that because I thought if ever they were going to lure her back into mixed martial arts, it would be for that show because they seemed at that time to be really pulling out all the stops to maybe afford people that otherwise they might not be interested in paying up for and things like that, people from the past.
Yeah.
And she shut that down for reasons that she didn't want to get into. Come to find out later, she'd already said in another interview that Dana had particularly told her not to speak negatively about the president. So it put her in a tough spot to explain why she wouldn't do the White House card. But now we're finding out with the Gina Carano news that she also, you know, felt the UFC out to some degree, or at least she told ESPN she did, about maybe having Rousey Carano in the octagon, and those talks didn't go anywhere either. So here we are. And when I saw the announcement, aside from that, I thought of SureDog, actually. I thought of, we were at the Fight Expo in San Diego in 2008. We had a radio row set up. We were doing podcasting, and Gina sat with us. And despite the fact that she was just taking off in Elite XC and was becoming this poster girl darling of the sport, she talked to us for like a half hour, like she was like some WEC prelim fighter.
Yeah.
And it's like, this woman is just going to be money for the rest of her life. It's just the way it's going to be. She's too magnetic. She's too good with like interpersonal relations, and like she has all those it factors that, you know, just a great fighter doesn't have. And I always thought that there was a one-off fight for her somewhere down the line. I thought the intrigue of her finally fighting in the UFC would be a big part of it to make it feel huge. But we're sitting now in a place, Josh, where, you know, combat sports in this country, if it's not TKO, is basically like the freak show fights in Japan in throughout the early 2000s. You know, you do these matches because, holy shit, they're going to fight. And that's it. The beginning and end of the proposition. These two massive personalities, what the fuck's going to happen? Bob Sapp versus Minowa Man, you know. Mm-hmm. It's like this curiosity thing. Not to say these women haven't earned more respect than those two. The thrust of why it's worth putting the show on and paying for the show and putting it in the fucking Intuit Dome is because it has that WTF at the heart of it, because of when it's happening, not just who it's involving. And I think Ronda's one of the absolute best at making people care about what she does. So I don't have any, I personally didn't have any like hesitation as to this is a great call to put this fight together. I mean, if your goal is to maximize attention, I do worry, you know, she's been very open about her CTE struggles, or at least, you know, CTE adjacent struggles in podcasts and stuff. So I'm not sure Carano's going to be that much of a problem for her in that department. When you thought about her maybe being coaxed into fighting Amanda Nunes again, that's a different proposition in terms of the position that's putting her in. But I think this will be, it's not, it's just like, you know, when Chael fought, when Hoyce Gracie fought Ken Shamrock in Bellator, when Chael, Tito Ortiz, it's just what these fighters, what's available to them after a certain point in their lives.
So Ronda is 39. She last fought in December 2016, then that first round loss to TKO loss to Amanda Nunes. And then Carano is 43. She'll be 44 by the time this fight happens. She last fought in August 2009 against Chris Cyborg. And you remember that fight, and that was another first round loss. It is, and even, you know, you're mentioning the Chael and Tito fights and Bellator and things like that, and like you mentioned WEC, it's like my heart just kind of hurts because that was such a fun time, right?
It was.
Everything, it was just.
It was the 80s pro wrestling. You had Crockett, you had Bill Watts.
Yeah, different presentations, different feels. Strikeforce had a different aesthetic than WEC, which is obviously the lighter weight classes, but also the color blue was a big thing for them. Sunday nights on Versus, that was their home. And you had Strikeforce on Showtime, and you had this Strikeforce Challengers, which has own different kind of feels, like a club type of thing. But it was really late at night, and it was really interesting. And then, of course, then you had the UFC, and it was, and then of course
Affliction,
Pride, yes, yeah,
and then Dream, and
yeah.
I mean, it was, yeah, everybody was still making a bid, you know, to be the place where you would point eyeballs. And even back to Frank and Cesar Gracie in the first Strikeforce, there's always been a promotion willing to put on fights like Rousey Carano, and there always will be. And MVP is just the latest.
Yeah. Yeah. I saw this, and the thought was, as kind of the day went on, is how much more people care about this than your average UFC main event, and just this mass tonnage and all this, and some things that Luke had talked about a couple of weeks ago when he was on, and I wish I'd kind of followed up on, but he's talked about his other shows a lot, is, you know, his concern about kind of the business in general in years from now, a couple of years from now, and that TKO is going to own everything in terms of combat sports when it comes to the MMA side, the UFC side, the boxing side, and the pro wrestling side. And he just, there's this, you know, this kind of concern about the UFC shows in themselves, and just there's so many, and it just doesn't, they're pulling in these huge profits, but I mean, there's quote unquote stars are unrecognizable, right? I mean, they just don't have that same thing. I think part of that is there's less competition. You know, there's you don't have this. PFL just doesn't feel like a competitor at all. They put on shows, but people don't really care. There's just this thing of they have more money than ever. People are packing these arenas, and it doesn't feel as big yet. And from the crowd size, it is. And I can't fully grasp or get my head around why that is, but fights like this, like there should be fights that UFC puts on that are big like this, but they don't seem to want to go the extra mile with, like, you know, Francis Ngannou was not in the promotion, even like the Rico Verhoeven, the kickboxer, they wanted to bring in. It was a factor of money that they weren't able to get him in. And it's just like, that shouldn't be a factor when you're making this much money. Like, make the biggest fights, and they just don't.
It's not about, yeah. It's not about how much revenue you're making. It's a profit margin.
Yeah.
You're publicly traded, you got to make a margin. And if you pay people too much, you don't make the margin, and it looks like you failed on the books, even if you did double the business as far as money in. And TKO is being run by Mark Shapiro, and he's a quarters, numbers, shareholder value, as he has to be, per the law in a lot of ways. These now entities exist strictly to make more money without spending more money. Okay? That's it. Now, when it comes to what happened to the sport and why you don't get that feeling of big event anymore, it's because the model changed. We got what we were asking for years back in the Sherdog days, where mixed martial arts was treated like every other major American sport,
mm-hmm.
where you weren't asked to pay for the big event, and therefore the promotions weren't incentivized to build up personalities to make one thing feel like the big event. If this is a sport, then they're going to get paid the same amount no matter who wins and who loses, because the contract is set and the networks are willing to pay enough that it makes more sense than doing this a la carte pay-per-view model. I think the only reason the sport felt like pro wrestling in that way, which is hilarious because a lot of the people that pine for the days of how great the sport were also hate pro wrestling. But what they loved about it was that it was organized like pro wrestling. And now that it's organized like the NBA, they think it's fucking boring, which I love. The idea is that you no longer have to engineer these storylines and pit these personalities against each other to maximize your dollar. In fact, now, especially in the Paramount era, you know, ESPN, it was still kind of alive because there was upside on a pay-per-view. They were charging you $80 to watch a show, and if revenue did pass a certain amount, UFC did make more. But for the most part, most shows didn't cross that threshold unless Conor was on it for the most part. Or Jon Jones. That's kind of what we were left to understand. Not all of it was public. But there's not even that incentive now. I don't even understand why every show on Paramount isn't a numbered event. What's the difference between a fight night and a numbered event now? They cost the same. They're on the same platform. They're in the same arenas. The cards are equally thin now for the most part. They try to load up the Paramount show, and then the Amanda Nunes and Kayla Harrison fight fell through, and it felt like every other show, which it was a good show. But it's going to be much more kind of slow drip, staggered. What we used to think of is, oh, this is a 12-fight card designed to make me want to spend $40. That's going to be 12 fights over 12 months. Spread out, and two of them are going to fall through due to injury, and this is the sport we said we wanted when we begged and pleaded for mainstream attention. We want SportsCenter to cover this. Not only did SportsCenter cover it, they went in for several billion dollars over 5 years and broadcast it across the worldwide leader and put it right in the firmament of American sport in a way that WWE could never hope to be, and this is what we get on the other side of that.
Be careful what you ask for, right?
Well, I mean, not to kid you, just, you know, understand that the only reason the sport felt like it used to is because that was how to make the most money. Now, this is how to make the most money.
Yeah, do you think, I was talked to Luke about this and John as well, John Pollock the other day. Do you think that, I have this feeling, I don't think TKO is good for any of these businesses. I think they are.
Well, yeah, from a fan, no one thinks the big public consolidator in any industry is good for their business as far as the consumer experience, because they like I said, they exist primarily to get more out of spending less, to make more, you know, higher ticket prices, higher prices in general. I don't care if it's a carton of eggs or a ticket to WrestleMania. You just keep pushing that price until it breaks and you pay enough that you have to retreat. But that is the first and primary consideration. What's like the macro vision of these TKO guys? You hear like Ari Emanuel hold court on a podcast or something. It's this on location business. It's this idea that like we actually can unlock people who will spend fucking $200,000
right
to get a VIP handheld treatment through a UFC event and hang out with Dana for 25 minutes. You know, that's what they're looking at. They're trying to get there. They're not trying to get you back. Fuck you. This arena's full, or at least the coffers are full. WrestleMania is a $30 million gate. The days we pine for it could barely get to a million.
Do you think
inflation adjusted?
Yeah. Do you think the pressure's on Levesque to sell Mania? I'm starting to. There's a lot. You know, the ticket thing. I think they know that narrative's out there now, and I mean the numbers are what the numbers are, and every other promotion would kill for those low ticket numbers, right?
It's but all this about is.
But they've said
year over year.
Yeah.
It's not about what other promotions would be happy to get. It's strictly about what you did last year and can you top it, which is why they went back to Vegas, because Vegas was guaranteeing more money. Mm-hmm. So they're already starting ahead. As far as I can tell, I don't know that that's absolutely the case, but that's the only thing that made sense to me, why they fucked New Orleans over and just did it again. Because there's so much pressure. It's why WrestleMania's in Saudi Arabia. There's so much pressure to beat last year's numbers. And honestly, you start behaving this way when you're headed toward another sale or take private, honestly. You start trying to absolutely play every card you can to make the numbers look as rich as you can so that when a new suitor comes in, you can charge the highest premium possible and sort of convince that buyer that the current state is the steady state kind of revenue they'll be buying if they buy you.
Right.
Triple H's predicament is not just that, you know, if he doesn't sell at WrestleMania, he's going to be viewed negatively and deal with negative commentary. It's that the bosses can just say, no, you're not the booker anymore, like it used to be, you know. But Ron Fuller would say, Louis Tillette, get the fuck out of here. You're not my booker anymore. Next. You know, there's no reason that WWE is not, that we wouldn't expect WWE to be entering this era under TKO ownership where we have a revolve. I think we should have a revolving door of bookers. I think there should be a new chief of creative every year. I think you should give a ton of people an opportunity to make WrestleMania as big as they can, and then you refresh it with a new set of eyes. Because one thing I've noticed over the past like decade in wrestling is there is actually a significant bump in interest that you can feel and sense and see in numbers to the degree we still see numbers, just to see a new creative regime show what they got. That was a huge part of why when Triple H took over and Vince departed, that the numbers skyrocketed. It was this kind of subtextual, like, wait, there's a new guiding hand here. I want to see what this feels like. This is pretty cool. This is different. That's how people consume wrestling now. It's not just who's wrestling and whether they want one guy to win or one woman to win. It's also, how's the show going to look and feel different now that I know? It's just like HBO series, right? They have different directors for every episode of a lot of these absolutely legendary television shows. I think Triple H is probably shitting his pants at the prospect that that's how TKO would start to look at things.
Right.
And that this, you're not going to be Vince. That's not how we want to run this business. We want to be able to swap in and out. You saw how they panicked. Unreal Season 1 laid it very clear on Elimination Chamber last year. Who gives a fuck if Elimination Chamber sells out? Well, since when does that show the ultimate litmus test for how the business is doing? They had such a freak out that that arena wasn't going to sell out, that dome, that they wanted to turn Cody, well, they wanted to turn, they ended up turning Cena heel.
Right.
For no other reason than we just felt like we need something big on this show, and you turn Cena heel in his retirement year for no other reason than one event gave you the heebie-jeebies about whether you're losing momentum.
Mm-hmm. Making moments. That's what they want to do, right? Make moments. Wow. And then The Rock disappears. And then there's a question about all this stuff, which I think is a...
And that's the next chess piece. That's Triple H moves out. The next guy is Rock's personal choice.
Yeah, which everyone thinks is going to be Brian Gewirtz. I know he's denied it, and of course he would. But I mean...
Brian, I don't think Brian would be the named person, but he would be puppeteering for sure.
Sure.
Whoever it would be.
I would agree. I think it's going to be fascinating to watch.
You watch Unreal, Josh, and Triple H is literally looking at the camera and going, you know, we talked to Rock's creative team. Well, Rock is a different creative team. If I'm just watching the show as a WWE fan, like, what the fuck does he have his own creative team for?
Right.
You're going to find out.
Yeah, I would agree. Let's see. What else we got? All right, let's talk about... Some podcasting stuff. We talked about kind of the state of news media and all that stuff. And you were asking for topics, and this is kind of a big thing I want to talk about because, Jack, you and I talked, we're the very first episode of this podcast in May 30th, 2015, a lifetime ago.
Wow, that's crazy.
For both of us. And I said...
I've guessed it was 2015.
I said at the very end, you were the very first guest in this podcast, and you're going to be the final guest on this podcast. This is it.
This is the last one. And you hit me with that without warning me or anything.
I want to get your genuine reaction on this show.
I feel like I've just been punched out. I feel like I've been guarding up here as the big fat guy, and you just realized you could hit me right in the gut and put me down.
Yeah, bald bull there.
It's an honor. I'm going to miss the chance to come on here and just, I don't have an outlet quite like this anymore. So it's always fun.
Yeah, it has been fun.
Congratulations, man, in a way. I mean, I'm going to call it at some point.
So I want to go cut through some of the reasons, because you know this space so well, with Labs Fan being so huge and such a, it means something to so many people. So I want to kind of go through some of the rationale here and kind of the bigger bigger idea. So I heard this quote. I don't listen to Marc Maron, but his podcast ended last year. And he mentioned one of his quotes I saw somewhere stuck out. He said, it's okay for things to end. It's just time, folks. Yeah. And sometimes it is okay for things to end. I think there's a lot of reasons for this. A few is that this space is so crowded.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, since 2015, I mean, how everyone has a podcast now. Every subject has podcasts. And it is really, really hard to find a niche in this podcast space. I mean, you guys have done it, and it is you've cornered it in so many ways that people, it's a brand name. It's in this space, and unless, I mean, I just see so many people popping up with the same old shows, with recap shows. Two people recapping a show, and can I say the most outlandish thing? Can I do this? Can I do this? And it's just, there's in every industry, there's just so much. It's hard to really find good stuff. And I think people kind of latch on to a few people and like, I need to scratch this itch in this part of this industry, whether it's fantasy football or TV reviews or politics or wrestling. It's hard. It's really hard to break through. It was hard to break. I mean, 2015 was hard. And now it's like, I mean, starting a podcast now, I see people all the time like asking other bigger podcasts for advice. You know, what advice would you give me? It's like, I don't know. Find a very hyper-specific niche and just go for it. But it's hard to find those, especially in wrestling.
Yeah. Yeah, man. So much to say now that I realize the way to... You're so sneaky. All you said is, we're just going to talk about, you know, things that are changing in podcasting.
Things are changing. Man. Yes, yes, yes.
Oh, man. I would have wore a tuxedo if I knew this was the occasion. Video killed the podcast star.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that these people now have to be on camera changes the entire energy of what they're doing. When it was just voice, you had, and we still stick to just voice at Lapsed Fan. That's just the way it's going to be, motherfuckers.
Same here.
Until someone pays us $6 million to be on video, it's going to be that way. Because we did video with Dark Side, and all the comments are just about what shirt you're wearing and the look on your face. Mm-hmm. And if the people, and if you remind them of someone that pissed them off in high school, like, fuck that. It has to be about the content. It has to be about, we've prepared this for you, and you put it on the table like a meal. Now eat it and tell me what you think of it. And if you don't like it, don't come back to my restaurant. But don't judge me on anything but what's on that plate. And there's, people aren't bringing things that are carefully prepared to the plate in podcasting anymore. They are, as you said, just bringing a general sense of like, takes are monetizable. And takes are not monetizable like people think they are. Information, perspective, insight is monetizable. If you can convince your audience, and if you can find an audience that believes that when push comes to shove, you're going to put words, the words to how they feel and think about not just wrestling, but the world, and that they can reliably turn to you to be like, yeah, yeah, exactly. Exactly what I was trying to say, but I couldn't say it myself. That's where the podcast niche is. If you can become people who give voice to what a certain contingency feels, that's much easier said than done, but you can find your people if you take a risk and be yourself on the mic instead of try to imitate what you think other people did to succeed, because all they did was be themselves too. Guest conversation podcasts, I think, are what's most difficult to make work now, because you are at the mercy of the quality of your guest every time you hit record.
Mm-hmm.
And you spend most of your time, not most, but too much of your time worrying about the next guest and how to get them and how to book them and how to line them up, instead of worrying about, will this podcast be something that anyone would want to listen to a second time?
Mm.
We say it on Lapsed all the time, shelf life. We do these journeys. They sit on the shelf and people go back to them 3 years later. We know this because they tell us they do that. Holt McCallany goes back to the lamentable tragedy of World Class because he realizes the fucking truth, which is that we don't fuck around. And if we're going to take the time to hit record, it's going to be timeless. Or we're going to try our best to make it timeless. Because, not to make a Tony Storm reference, timelessness is the key. It is the key. You see it in fashion. You see it in all of a sudden this, every typeface and every commercial now looks like it used to look in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like Claude uses the same typeface that Apple used in the 80s. Stranger Things uses the same typeface. Mm-hmm. That... We live in an era now where, because of YouTube, essentially, the next generation can decide to be nostalgic for any decade they want because they have full and unfettered access to the aesthetics of that generation. and they can sit there for a year and train themselves to feel like they're in the 70s, to dress, look, appear, converse like they're in the 70s or 80s or 20s or 40s or the 2010s. You don't have to only be nostalgic for the decade you grew up in. We didn't have a choice but to be nostalgic for the 90s. That's the only fucking decade we remember well enough. Or the
80s. Yeah, yeah.
To rewear, to rethink, to retalk, to share, because we didn't have this compendium of video that told us really what it was like to live in a time that we didn't. And I say all that to say that you want to be something that comes back around in 10 years.
Right.
If you don't feel like that's going to happen, you might want to do something else. You might want to spend your time doing something else. But with video, that message is so much harder to land because people are so preoccupied with what they're seeing. And I think you probably know this as someone that's audio first yet turns the camera on, but it's like anyone who worked from home through COVID, anyone who became creatures of Zoom and that whole thing that happened to us, it's exhausting in a different way physically to speak for the camera versus to speak.
Yeah.
Is it? Everyone wants a podcast to sound like you're talking to your buddies. Turn a fucking camera on when you talk to your buddies. You talk to your buddy like he's sitting there. You don't talk to your buddy like he's the local news reporter putting in a microphone in your face at the scene of the robbery. Oh, I saw the guy go over here. It's crazy. You know, that's a different energy, and that exhausts you. And you can't do it as long and as hard as it takes to make it a sustainable revenue-producing thing, I don't think. Maybe that's just me. I've tried video and I'm like, fuck this. Like this like gets in the way.
Yeah.
Gets in the way of what I'm trying to get across here. And if 16 people listen and they feel it to the point they want more and they may even pay for more versus 200,000 people see it and never want to see me again, I'll take the 16 people.
Yeah.
And that's where you need to be.
Yeah. This podcast has never been video. I like doing the video on so we can actually have that conversation.
Yeah.
But I always tell people, I'm like, because they're like, oh, do I have to get you? I'm like, no, just don't worry about it. Like, because I don't want, because I've been on video before on other shows and it's great. I've always take the invite, but you're thinking. You're thinking about your positioning. Like, you're thinking about like.
You're presenting, you're not talking.
Yeah. And you have to really think of all this as they're asking you questions. Like, I did this. This deep dive into one run of John Cena's career for Poison Rana from Post Wrestling. I a lot of fun. I went back and watched all this old stuff I never thought I'd watch again.
Yeah.
And so it was a 3-man box. I just remember like I stand up I don't like sitting anymore when I'm doing podcasts.
Sure.
But I'm like watching myself in frame and I'm like trying to regurgitate, but I'm also kind of like watching to make sure I don't go like.
Yes.
And it's I don't want to have to
talk.
I know.
That's all people want.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, and honestly, I'm going to be straight up with you. Like, seriously, if someone is not going to listen to your podcast because it's not on video, they ain't worth a fucking dollar. Mm-hmm. They won't pay anything. At least dollar for dollar, they won't pay anywhere more than you would get if you were just on audio. Especially when you add in the tailwind of like, if you're on audio, you can extrapolate more. You can be more creative. You can be longer form. You can do it in several takes. You can press mute and go away for a second if real life requires your attention and come back to it and the listener doesn't know the difference. There isn't this jump cut. There isn't the, you know.
Jump cuts.
We fell into this. Remember, you know, in TV class in high school, the jump cut was the worst sin you could commit. You never wanted your frame. You never wanted to suddenly be 2 inches closer in the frame without some sense of transition or to cut to another angle to get to not make that so jarring. And now every YouTube video is and the head is in different locations every 6 seconds. Gigs up, man. We lost it. What YouTube did to video production has just created a generation of insufferable ticks. Mm-hmm. That people have when they feel like they're on camera. It's just creating generations of people who don't feel like they're living unless they're documenting, who don't really live their lives, but rather produce a reality show about their lives. And I can't think of a more depressing situation than that.
Yeah, that's a great point. It is because you feel it when you see just people all the time. It's athletes or all like, we don't need you in our lives as much, you know? How can we miss you if you don't ever go away? But now that mantra is so dead, you know.
It's almost like they look at you like like they like you short circuited their brain at a certain age. They look at you like, huh? Like that's it doesn't even compute because they don't have the reference point we do. That's why we always say it used to be better on the lapsed van. People think we're just talking about, you know, Hogan matches versus Will Ospreay matches. We're not. We're talking about the superstructure of how we used to consume entertainment and how the performers were compensated. And it, not to say they're not making better money than they used to, but the fact that you could sell a VHS for $80. And so people could create industries and create different ways of making film and entertainment because they knew there was a profit center in media and it doesn't just go into this big slop bucket of what you get on Netflix for $10 a month. It's great stuff on Netflix, but the point is no one has to buy anything a la carte anymore, you know, and that's bad. That's really bad.
Another reason guests are very hard because everyone has a podcast. Guests are hard to book because I
literally book other podcast hosts on your podcast
right.
to try to get your podcast going. That's a strategy.
Yeah. Or you really admire other people. You have good conversations, whatever, or you think they might be good. And it is, it's hard to book now because you're working around their schedule. It's like not everyone has the time that you do. So you're trying to make things work and it's kind of like, okay, I really want to talk about this. And someone's like, well, I'm not free for 2 weeks or I'm really busy or all these things. And then it's kind of just like, all right, well, if I was Joe Rogan, would you say you were busy? Once you start getting in that space of just like, am I not good enough? Then it's just like, it is, you start kind of going down the road. And I have a schedule, weekly schedule. Like I don't come out every single week or a certain day or something like that. But I mean, I produce this, I edit it, I book the guests, I do the conversation. I mean, I can't imagine anyone doing a set weekly show where they have guests and doing it all themselves. That is just impossible.
You need producers. Yeah, you need guests. But you know, it's like anything. It's like the afternoon show on NPR or something. It's, you know, they have a production crew of 30 people. I mean, Fresh Air with Terry Gross, which in a lot of ways was a precursor to a lot of the podcasts we know today. You can just listen to the end of the show and she lists everyone that helps. It's like seven, eight people.
It's insane. Yeah.
To put together a 45-minute interview, and she works magic with the limited time she has. You're reminding me of something in the Sherdog days. I used to do a popular show called Rewind where we had a feature called The Sit Down. It would be, you know, very long in-depth conversations with these fighters. And it would get to the point where it's like, I really want to book someone big and they're not going to have that kind of time. And so you could feel like you might be cheapening the proposition for no other reason than just the random, the vicissitudes of someone else's availability, you know, and it's like, you got a flow going and they have to go. It's like, but I'm also never going to get these people. If I tell them, can I have 2 hours? They'll never say yes to that. We had Rhonda on. I had Rhonda on one time. I think it's still on YouTube. Was one of the longest interview she had done at that point, right before she was going to fight Misha Tate in Strikeforce. And it was amazing because she wasn't used to being asked all these questions yet. That's the thing about guests. I'm not poo-pooing it, but I've done it and I know what it takes and I know how it can create an untenable, unsustainable situation that won't allow you to run hard for 12 years like we've been doing on Lapsed Fan, where it's just me and my co-host JP. And yes, we have guests, but only if they can add to what we're talking about already. The guest isn't the show, right?
Right.
We just interviewed Coco Beware because we're on a journey to document Hulk Hogan's entire life. Like by the time we're done, like you're not going to be able to write a book or do a documentary or do anything about Hulk Hogan without citing us because we're just turning over every stone. And we've talked to his boyhood friends that grew up with him in Tampa. We've talked to Brian Blair about having one of his first matches in Florida. We've talked to Charlie Platt announcing matches no one's ever seen that he had in Alabama before he ever went to Memphis, which is for the most part, with the exception of the Andre the Giant arm wrestling footage that we have from Alabama is the earliest stuff that exists on tape of Hulk. And we talked to Coco Beware about playing a part in training him and Ed Boulder in Memphis in 79, when Hulk first moves past Alabama, kind of ventures out for the first time and goes to work for Jerry Lawler and Jerry Jarrett. But they're serving our narrative. Those guests are helping us tell Hulk Hogan's story. It's not like, all right, we had Coco. Now, next week, who are we going to get? It's like, it's not that it can't work. It's been done.
Yeah.
You know, the YouTube is full of podcasts that existed from like 2009 to 15, 16 of like every wrestler do it. They could find every person they could find. Like John Paz does a great job finding Two Man Power Trip. He's got everybody. He had Jerry McDevitt before anybody knew that Jerry McDevitt would do a fucking podcast. And I can say this personally, having helped with the Dark Side episode on the trial, because they got Jerry, we knew we could get Jerry for Dark Side. Because he's actually willing to not only talk, but expound upon representing Vince all those years, including in the trial. It's all been done, man. You're not going to fight. And now people are so tightly controlled that you'd want to interview, and to your point, are like negotiating. It's just, it's almost like, it's a business proposition before it's a business.
Yeah, I would agree. I'd agree. I always pop when Dave calls him a Coco Ware. I don't know why. I just think it's so funny because all, you know, I knew him as Coco
B. Like, that's like a flex. Like, I knew him before the B.
Exactly. Dwayne.
The B is a Vince thing. Yeah.
That's right. That's right. He always says Dwayne with The Rock because he knew him. You know, he doesn't Dwayne call
too.
him.
Yeah.
Dwayne. His buddy Dwayne.
That's nothing compared to Coco saying that basically he told us, I mean, God bless the guy, but he told us that Rock wasn't really over until he became a movie star.
Oh, really?
That's the thing about these wrestlers too. Yeah, you can have them on as guests, but you're going to get more Whoppers than $600 at Burger King, my friend.
Yeah. Wow. Another reason. I think you mentioned Bill Simmons earlier. I think he still does. I don't know anyone else. I'm sure there's other news sites that may do this that has a center podcast, a tentpole flagship, and gets other guests on. He does such a good job and always has done with getting his staffers on and making them stars.
Correct.
And on our website, we don't do that.
Right.
I think this show has had more guests on from other shows and other writers from our site than any other show in this network's history.
Well, look, I sit here as testament to the fact that when Dave does open the kimono a little bit, so to speak, you make a winner because he allowed me to go on Observer Radio and promote the WrestleMania series we did at the very beginning of this podcast, WrestleManias 1 through 30 in order, with the lapsed fan treatment.
Mm-hmm.
And he was kind enough to give us time to talk about every WrestleMania in sort of like 5 to 10 minute chunks over 2 or 3 recording sessions. And so we spliced those and put those in our coverage of every WrestleMania, put it up on YouTube, ton of attention that we otherwise wouldn't have gotten.
Mm-hmm.
So it worked. It works, you know, but you do have a window. You do have a window to create the next generation. If that's your, I'm under no obligation to do that. But if that's what you want to do, that's how you do it.
Yeah.
It's not unlike any drive time radio on any major market radio station. You know, it's like, you know, Boston, Maddie in the Morning.
Mm-hmm.
Billy Costa was in the chair with him all those years. And everyone thought, you know, Maddie in the Morning, he was the franchise Marconi winner. If you don't know who he is from Boston, he's the main pop top 40 drive time morning show host that just came to epitomize the city. He was the voice of the city.
If you drove in to the city, if you were in a dentist's office, a doctor's office, a hospital waiting room, anything like that, that's where you listen. My wife still listens to Billy and Lisa driving in the morning. Yes.
Billy and Lisa were in the studio all those years with Maddie.
Right.
And when Maddie had to step aside, people were willing to accept the replacement.
Right.
But that was only because they stewed in the same juices, so to speak, which, considering how it ended for Maddie, I might want to raise that. But, that's how radio's done it forever. You know, you bring on who you think is the heir apparent in sort of like a subtle way, but in a way where the audience gets intensely comfortable with them, so that if something happens and something changes, it's not this jarring transition to a new voice.
Yeah, there's a lot of people I see it occasionally. If I skim by our boards, people wondering like what the succession plan is if when Dave is done. I mean
HBO music.
I know. What a
there is none. That's your answer.
There isn't, and I can honestly say we haven't.
I'm just gonna go to the wheels fall off. I know him well enough. I
mean, yeah, yeah.
Not his best friend, but I know how it's gonna. I know how he's gonna ride out.
Yeah,
he's gonna die with his boots on, like they say in the military.
Yeah, it's funny because he's covered guys like Vince Forever and Dana, and he's talked about these guys that this is what they are, and they will do it until they die. And I can't picture him doing anything else, you know. And I don't think he wants to. I think he'd do less, but I don't ever think he's not going to talk about this industry. And I still think he's at his best, and I think others do too, when all of a sudden he'll just go on a 15-minute rant about something historical. And
that's
he'll
what
just
I
go
say
from
about the
WrestleMania, order. Right? And he just goes from this to this to this to this, and doing it in a way where you know he knows his shit. And sometimes the current day, whatever, there's some things that you kind of miss, and I think there's just so much onslaught of stuff. Back then, there wasn't, and he just knows it because he talked to the people, he lived it.
Well, back then it was too, but the fog of war was different in that you weren't being checked every 2 minutes.
True,
And that changes the kind of, I don't know if it does for Dave, I'm not speaking for Dave, but I think generally speaking, that changes the kind of risks you're willing to take. When every word that comes out of your mouth is followed on by, did that sound right? Well, is that going to, you know, is that going to be chopped up? Like, you have no choice but to think that way, I would imagine. But if you talk about this, that's why on Lapsed Fan, like, we don't try to go deep on a subject. Like, until Terry Funk passed, we didn't do what we called the Lapsed Funk, which was a complete exhaustive dive into why he was who he was and why he's the greatest professional wrestler of all time. By the time we were done with that, going through all of his matches, all of the newspaper, it's settled history now. There's not going to, you know, it'd be like doing the Chris Benoit tribute in 2005. It would have been fucking pointless because the whole story ends up being about what he does in 2007. And it's so much more satisfying, I think, for the format of podcast to deal in settled history. That's why true crime is such a phenomenon, because you can sit down and talk about things that the book has almost entirely closed on. These people are gone. These people have done what they've done, and we can assess in totality without the fog of, you know, the daily what about, you know, what about isms, and the yeah buts that come with commenting on what's happening in real time. And there's a market and value in that. I'm not saying that that's the first draft of history. We need people trying to gather information and reach conclusions in real time so that there is something to talk about in 2 years. That's one thing I worry about, is that, you know, what's happening to information is becoming so diffuse and so lame and so watered down that people are losing sight of the fact that the only reason they have something to talk about all day is because people are paid to gather the information, the people that they skewer, the people that they demonize, the people that they call the enemy. The only reason you have a raison d'etre, the only reason you have a reason to wake up in the morning because you've built your life around trying to win Twitter fights, is because of the people that you profess to hate. Because they're the ones that give you the fodder to chew on every day. And we're reaching a point where pretty soon they're going to feed on themselves. They're not feeding on a legacy media source that they can quibble with, gets conspiratorial about, take 6 different views on, and that's their identity and that's their digital footprint. You know, you're going to eat another Twitter account alive? Is that what you're going to, you know?
Yeah.
And then pretty soon everyone's feeding on each other instead of feeding on a sentinel of information that we all agree was gathered in a way that is a little more professionalized than just, you know, observing with your own 2 eyes out in the street, recording with your cell phone without the ability to say, okay, now that I have that perspective, it's not journalism until I rush to the perspective that may disagree with that and include what they have to say in the copy as well. And even if it comes out still slanted, the ethic of journalism is there, and that the perspective of the person who would disagree is also in there.
Yep.
That's what makes it journalism.
Yep. I also think, going back to kind of the Dave stuff, when he's done / gone,
that's so weird.
I know.
I'm just to talk about this.
Well, yeah. I'm thinking, like, because so many people give him so much shit, and I don't agree with everything he says, but I just think of things like his obits, and because I edit I see the final Observer before I put it up, and I go through.
Booker T is gonna love Dave's obit of him.
Oh yeah, of course. And just the, like, I do all the paragraph things. I'm like, wow, is this story still going on and on and on? And it's all just like, but it's people that the average wrestling fan today probably does not know, but he likes to show so much reverence, and like, they were a person. That's why, like, even though it drives me crazy on Wrestling Observer Radio when they lead off with, you know, obits of people that most haven't heard of. He's like, this is more important than getting to an AEW Dynamite recap, which is going to happen every week.
It's important enough to make sure we don't forget it.
Let's exactly.
Say it right now, because there's a chance. Yeah, that's how I always interpret when he does that. It's like,
yeah,
I don't want to not say something, so let me say it right now.
Right. And then he'll, in these obits he does, and including the guy, the great Mephisto that passed away a couple of weeks ago, is one of the oldest wrestlers, or he was talking about this ring announcer the other day. And like, that stuff, that if you're into history and you give a shit about history,
Yes.
No one else does that. I mean, other people do, but not in a sense, not like the
And
the,
here's the thing.
Go ahead.
He's not able to do that unless he's in the trenches every day gathering the information. Because what at the end of the day, what allows him to synthesize is that he rode the wave of having these people lie to him and being able to discern the truth, of hearing 3 to 4 different versions of the same story, so that by the time the obituary comes around, he can feel confident that he's writing the truth. He's not going back and rereading 4 different accounts again and having to regurgitate the 4 different accounts. He did the work in real time in a business full of professional liars to say this is the most work any human being breathing on earth is going to do to find out the truth of something that happens in professional wrestling, a world where, as we all know, if a mainstream newspaper makes a mistake in a wrestling article, they just won't even bother running a correction. They just won't, because it's phony baloney nonsense, because the winners are determined ahead of time. And to your point, they're not real people. And wrestlers internalize that, and they move through the world that way. You know, they just, they get an unnatural high off of manipulating people. You know, they think that's what they were put on earth to do, essentially. Mm-hmm. Because they just, their whole life is a kind of a falsity.
Well, it's exactly how I wanted the final episode to go. I didn't know how it was going to go, but we're here. We're here at the very end. And yeah, you've been, this is not the last time we're going to talk on the airwaves. I still guest host Wrestling Observer Live 1 to sometimes 2 Sundays a month, depending on Andrew Zarian's availability, or as he currently went through last month, having no heat in his house due to frozen pipes and all this stuff. It's
a
been
wrestler's a wrestler's worst nightmare. No heat.
I know. I texted him today. I was in the car and I'm like, how's the heat going? And I almost replied back and not the rest. I almost said that.
Yeah, you got it.
This has been a fun run the past, 11 years. And doing like the year in review series stuff has been fun.
The year in review stuff, that's been great. You should consider keeping that going and just making that.
Yeah, that's it's not going to be the last time. I'm not done podcasting.
I know what you mean, though. You're off the hamster wheel. You're done. You're done creating this expectation of a regular cadence. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, it happens, man. It even, you know, in the lapsed fan, like we made our bones grinding out like deep dive reviews of one event at a time. And as time went, it's like, you know what? Like, let's actually let ourselves breathe. And if someone the caliber of Hulk Hogan passes away, let's just take the risk of saying, you know what, motherfuckers? Like, even if it's not what you've come to expect from us, everything's going on hold until we've said every last word that needs to be said about Hulk Hogan. And we're not here if not for Hulkamania in terms of inspiring us as kids to, you really want to learn as much as we can about this wrestling thing, you know, and be sucked into that world. And so, if the lapsed fan exists as a testament to the change to the wrestling business that Hulk Hogan was the avatar of, and a longing for the way things were structured then, not just on wrestling but in life, then it only makes sense that we say, you know what, like despite your whatever expectation you created in your head as a listener that we were just going to do one-off events forever, we got to do what serves us when it serves us, because otherwise you're not going to enjoy the show. You need us to want to do it.
Yeah, I agree. And I have ideas in the MMA space, and I have ideas in the wrestling space, but not a weekly or bi-weekly type of thing. Kind of what you're saying. There's something to tell, but you want to take the time to do it, and there's a reason to do it. And I keep going back to specific period of MMA, and I keep going back to it for a reason. I saw something today in a discussion about heavyweights from a different era, and I heard the names, and I got the feeling of just like, I want to go back to that. So I got some ideas, non-wrestling as well. So I'm not done yet, but yeah, I think
exactly. You want, trust me, you want me to want to do it. I want to do it for a reason other than I have a podcast.
Yes, exactly. There's too many people that do that already. And that's why this is
The fact that I have a podcast is not enough of a reason to want to do it.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, that's it. You can find Jack at the Laps Fan, of course. Jack and JP have been great guests on this show, and I'm sure he'll talk to you guys for some promos and Wrestling Observer Live, I'm sure, in the years ahead and all that. But you've been a great guest, a great friend, and one of the most talented people I've talked to. It's one of the reasons you're back time after time. I think the world of you, and I'm so glad you're the first guest. I'm so glad you're the last guest. Jack Encarnacio, thanks so much.
A lapsed guest. Well, salute to you, sir, and thank you.
Okay. Big thanks to Jack Encarnacio for stopping by. That interview was recorded last Tuesday. I wanted to post the show on Thursday, last Thursday. However, just life got in the way. There was a bunch of stuff to do for the website, and I wanted some time to actually do this this final chat with you and I, at least on this show anyway, and kind of go through a few things and all that. And you always try to time these things out. Ideally, when it's not, you know, a bunch of other things going on, I guess. We have a lot of different shows that go up, especially on like Fridays. And I think, you know, we have a couple going up on Friday as I'm recording this. As I'm recording this, I am hopefully on a beach somewhere. My wife and I are going away on vacation. So my hope is I'm there. I'm supposed to get half foot of snow tonight, get to clear all that out and get out of here first thing in the morning. So just the way the winter has been in the Northeast. And yeah, so I want to kind of go over a couple other points that hit on a little bit in the interview, kind of add a little bit more color. Again, this is you and I time. So there was no like influence or asking for me to not do the show anymore. It's 100% my choice. And it's honestly been on my mind for quite some time for a lot of the reasons I talked about with Jack. And it's just that there's a lot that goes into these things. I know that so many make it seem so seamless because obviously you flip on YouTube or, you know, just get a live stream going and just kind of go. But it all depends on kind of what you want it to be. And the goal of this show when I created it, and I think I hit on this when I talked to Luke Thomas a few weeks ago, which is why I wanted – originally Luke was – I think – did I say this during the show? That Luke was originally going to be the last guest, Luke and Jack, and I just kind of wanted to separate out after I did the Luke interview. So if I didn't, there's that. So when I saw Luke way back when, I thought I wanted to do something different. And that felt different to me than everything else that I was seeing at that time. And at the time, we didn't really have any MMA dedicated podcasts on this website. And so I said, okay, it's all wrestling, but boy, the guys talk a lot about MMA and UFC and everything. So why don't I do something that's specific to that, a little niche within our niche. So that's where the show originally started. This was MMA primarily from the inception through, I'd say 2021, maybe. In 2020, obviously with the pandemic, we had less MMA, then there was a whole thing and we were still doing shows, just weird feeling. And as that time, you know, AEW was kind of starting to ramp up and that kind of reignited my interest in the wrestling thing. So I started kind of transitioning more. So you can kind of see that over that, I think 2020, probably into 2021 is where this kind of started transition to more of a wrestling podcast rather than a UFC / MMA one. So originally I wanted to do something different and I think I achieved that. Overall, you know, I'm pretty happy with how things turned out. And as I kind of mentioned, it's hard with websites like this, which are so personality dominated with Brian and Dave. Cause I mean, it's their website, right? In terms of they're the two people that bring the boys to the yard, so to speak. Right. This is kind of how it works. And you have other people that come in and that's kind of what I mentioned with Bill Simmons and the Ringer and so on is he's always done a great job when he has guests. He has a ton of guests on and he really incorporates other people that write for the site and do podcasts for a site into his content. I think that's introduced a lot of people to a lot of other talented people. And I think our site could do a better job of that. But that's not really, I guess, necessarily what Wrestling Observer Radio is all the time. And yeah, it's just kind of an observation. I don't really know how I change that, but it's just a thing I've kind of thought about a lot through the years. And you know, to get promotion and, you know, especially you do things like the year in review series that Jack mentioned and so on. And those are things I don't like to, it's a fault of mine. I don't like to ask for help, you know, and those are things I thought were unique and hoped would get a little bit more publicity from our website and from those guys without actually me asking. I'm just being honest. And I have no grudges, no issues or anything like that. I've had a great run doing this show. And obviously it's because of just the ability of them turning the lights on and saying, go ahead and do the show. So And there was no, I never had any creative feedback, any, for better or for worse. I had asked Brian for technical stuff from here and then, and he was a big help with the start. The equipment I'm looking at to my right is because of him and his suggestions. But there was never any like censorship or anything like this at all, really. I think 0.0%. And so, yeah, it's kind of that the double-edged sword. I didn't really have any feedback, but I didn't really have any pushback either. And I didn't really have any promotion to speak of. So that's just kind of one thing. But it is what it is. I think if content, or should I say podcast, I hate when you people use content as an all-inclusive bucket. But if people, if you have a good show, people are going to find it. And it's up, and that's the other thing. This thing, too, as I mentioned, is you know, I'm my own producer, my own booker, my own talent, and also a promoter as well. And when you're doing this, and you have another job, and you have a family, and you have this and that, it becomes hard. So you have to rely on some of those mechanisms to promote and to do that. And it was a little bit more difficult than maybe I anticipated here. But regardless, we had, what, 11 years, right? What did I have to say that I started this? Back in 2015, yeah, 11 years coming up this May. How about that? So a few things there. Again, guests are hard. Yeah, I mean, I also thank, and I'm going to go through a few of the guests I had in the show. Guests are hard now because everyone has a podcast that's 100% accurate, and it's tough to not feel like you're infringing on people's time. Obviously, people with stuff to promote, it is much easier to get them on. But it is, you know, it's just kind of one of those things where a lot of the people I like to talk to and the conversations I like to have, it's busy people. And I kind of, you know, joke that, you know, if Joe Rogan came calling, would you get turned down? I've never got turned down. I've got turned down by a few people outright, not in a bad way, but just in a, they're not interested or not really doing that stuff. There's a couple I thought would be really good, especially for this website. Just didn't happen, but I can't focus on those people because, again, no ill will from them. You focus on the people that did show up. But it's very hard because people have their own podcasts, their own lives, and you're trying to coordinate with the time that you have available. And when you kind of combine that with, you know, not really getting a ton of promotion, not a lot of feedback, and so on, it just kind of leads into, like, what are we doing this for? And I don't – that's not really – why I wanted to do it. Once you kind of get that thought in your head, it's kind of like retirement, right? And Dana White said that about retirement all the time, is once people get that seed of retirement, this could be, and they're done. In a lot of ways, they're done. And that was kind of my thought. So I kind of outlined, I think this last summer, I kind of outlined a path to the end, and I pretty much got it. There was a few other shows, you know, I don't think I left any audio money on the table, so to speak. There are a few I wanted to get, but, you know, those things happen. And that was that. So, yeah, that was, I wanted to kind of really quick go over some of the guests and some things I forgot about in terms of people that were on this show. Where did I just put this list? So the top people, the guests that appear in here, the number one guests that appear in the most amount of times, I was surprised this many times. Our own Paul Fontaine, yes, talking about promoting other people, which I say this show has done. There's no other show on WrestlingObserver.com that has done more to promote other people that write for this site or so on, or even the industry in the media space in general, I think, than I have. I'm going to put that there right now. I look over my body of work, and we're going to get to that in just a minute. Paul Fontaine has appeared in the show 32 times. 32, that's right. And that was for the MMA year interview shows we used to do every December. He's also been part of the pro wrestling year interview show, so he's done a few of those, but 32 times by my tally. What? How about that? Number two, Brandon Thurston, appearing 13 times. That's pretty good. Obviously, we did our quarterly check-ins and so on. And also, I'm very proud to say, he was the, and he's mentioned this before, this was the very first podcast he ever did, was my show. And those are things that I always take with me if this whole thing was worth it. Jack Encarnacio, 9 times as a solo artist. John Pollock, 8 times. Dave Doyle. Yeah, Dave Doyle. Talking about back in the MMA days. And actually, the last time he was on, we talked about pro wrestling. He went to a show in Mexico, and he talked about that. Now, the MMA media space. He actually just emailed me a couple weeks ago after the Luke Thomas interview. And so Dave Doyle appeared in the show 7 times. Jesse Collins. Yes, Jesse Collins, good friend of the show. Also, 7 times. Rich Kraich, 6 times of Voices of Wrestling. E. Spencer Kite, my guy, ESK. Currently work for UFC.com and work for a bunch of MMA sites. He's one of my early guests. He's a really good guy and someone I haven't talked to in a long time. He also appeared 6 times, Andrew Thompson, 5 times, of course, now Fightful, Jason Powell, ProWrestling.net, Dan Stupp, I forgot about this, Dan Stupp had been in the show 4 times, longtime MMA media member. I think the last thing he was with was The Athletic. I'm not sure what he's with now. It might be something in the betting space, I think. But Dan Stupp, 4 times, Davey Portman, 4 times. The combo, kind of like, you know, people go in the Hall of Fame, you know, Hall and Nash go in as a combo for and individually, what have you. Let's see. Was just Jack and JP. Yes, Jack and JP from the Lapsed Fan, 4 appearances. So all overall, Jack Encarnacio has been on this show 13 times, tying with Brandon Thurston overall, if you count that. Jeremy Botter, our old friend, 4 times. John Nash. We joked about how people would confuse our names for each other often. 4 times. Great thought leader in the MMA space, especially on contracts and sifting through a lot of the bullshit. John Alba, 4 times. He got mentioned on the show today, and a good guy. Kate Elizabeth from Fightful, a great lady, great person, 4 times. Mark Raimondi also appeared 4 times. I tried to get him on for a 5th time to promote the NWO book, and this was before the book even came out. I was hounding him. And he could not do it or whatever, but so we didn't get a final chance to talk with Mark for 4 times there. And also Mike Bond of MMA Junkie, 4 times as well. I did not realize I talked to some of these people as many times as I did, but that's kind of your top list there. And I kind of want to just go through the rest of the list real quickly. Let's see. So Aaron Bronstetter appeared 2 times. MMA media reporter. He's a really funny guy. AJ Kirsch, remember him? He appeared earlier this year, or last year rather. Alec Price, of course, now in AEW, he appeared. Andreas Hale, he was an early guest of the show, now at ESPN. Andrew Buchholz appeared. Andrew Buchholz with Awful Announcing. Andrew Thompson, Andrew Zarian, Ant Evans, who was here to promote the Michael Bisping book, of course, formerly of the UFC. That was a good interview. We talked about tons of stuff there. If any of these people, if you're like, oh, I'd love to hear that show, I can't find in the Spotify archives or Apple, just hit me up anytime on social and I can point you to them. Ant Evans, of course, now doing a ton of YouTube stuff. Arta Ocal, you remember that? The former Kyle Edwards of WWE. He had not done an interview, I think, about WWE stuff in forever. And I got him. That was a big thing. In 2023, Errol Helwani, we had that booked. That was after his infamous interview with Tony Khan a few years ago. That was also in 2022. Feels like yesterday. But he and I had that booked beforehand, and we talked all about that. Boss Rutten, Ben Folks of MMA media fame. Now he's with Uncrowned, speaking of Errol Helwani. Ben Goldstein. And Ben Goldstein was a former MMA writer that appeared on Jeopardy and actually won some money. Bill Barron's an agent. Of course, to talk about Brandon Thurston. Brent Brookhouse was an early guest. Brett Okamoto of ESPN. MMA reporter appeared 3 times. Brian Campbell, great guy, now with Paramount 2 times. We had Brian Martin, who's a sports editor still in LA for the Orange County Times, I think. But he was a good guy. We talked about Ronda Rousey and stuff and some California things back in 2018, 2019. Brian Rose of this very website appeared 3 times. Case Kiefer out in Las Vegas. He is a MMA scribe as well. Of course, we had a combo of Case Lowe for Voice of Wrestling and Mike McGuire, who's always had me on his show from Celebrate Wrestling. E. Casey Layden, who is a gifted photographer or videographer, I'm sorry. And he was on the show to talk about, I believe he talked about his Muay Thai journey as well. He's like, he went from like a media member to a fighter, but he's also a media member and doing stuff for Uncrowned. Cashflow. He was with the, Tulsa King. Yes, he appeared not too long ago, actually last October. Chad Dundas, a great writer and also co-host the Co-Main Event podcast with Ben Folks, appeared 3 times. Sean Wheelock appeared 2 times. Sean, former Bellator announcer. And I believe on one of these podcasts, he talked about, it's funny, he talked about the doing voiceover work for porn for blind people. These are the things that I don't think people would have talked about if not for this podcast. So you can check that as well. The former Christian Casanova, Carmelo Hayes, appeared in the show. That was in 2020. I tell you, these wrestlers, they come on the show and they break big. Chuck Mendenhall, he was an early guest, the 4th episode, of course, now all over the place. Cody Saftick, who is a MMA reporter from Canada, kind of a betting expert. Cole Radrick, GCW. Colin McGuire used to write SmackDown for this very website. Court Bauer of MLW fame. He appeared back in 2016. I remember that because I was in, we were in our first house. I think the show has been recorded at four different locales, maybe five. I just think I remember that. I think I was sharing an office with my daughter's nursery at the time. Crooklyn, that's Stephanie Haynes from Bloody Elbow, Dan Shapiro of MMA Junkie, I believe. Danhausen appeared on the show a long time ago. Of course, I mentioned Dan Stupp. Danny Acosta. Yeah, Danny was on the show twice, 2015, 2016. He's a photographer. I think I knew him from Fight Magazine, and he had applied a couple times to do some stuff for our website. We just didn't really have a good fit. He's a good dude and someone I should have stayed in touch with a lot more. Dave LaGreca, that was last December. That was fun. David McGrath, I do not know. Sorry, I do know who this is now. David McGrath was in 2019. He's a military guy. And he was also doing some combat sports reporting and so on. I can't remember how I found him. That was back in August 2019. So David McGrath, Davey Portman mentioned, Denise Salcedo. She came on last year for the Year Review Series for an episode. Denny Burkholder appeared twice. And I was going to have Denny on a third time. I had an idea to do essentially like a podcast focused on John Cena versus Umaga, like that feud as part of kind of his retirement year. And I just ran out of time and just didn't have the time to kind of do the legwork. But I apologize to Denny for that. He's a great guy over at CBS and a lover of old school wrestling. Dr. Keith Lipinski appeared in this show. That was another thing I always liked to do, was have on people that were affiliated with our website in past or especially past and also current form as well. And there's a few people, a couple more people on this list. And there's a few others I tried to get and just couldn't for whatever reason. They turned it down. But Dr. Keith, I was able to get him. So that was a fun interview as well. Dwayne Finley, a former colleague at Fight Magazine. Eric Fontanez, same thing. No, Eric Fontanez, was he Bleacher Report? I'm not sure. Esther Lynn, speaking of Casey Layden, Esther Lynn, fantastic. Top of the tier media photographer, sports media photographer, especially in combat sports. I talked to her in 2017. That was a lot of fun. Ethan Renner, formerly of this website. We talked for a couple times during the Pro Wrestling Year Interview Series. Evan Husney of Dark Side of the Ring. That was fun. Garrett Gonzalez has appeared. Garrett Kidney, part of the Year Interview Series. He of the TNA podcast. The History of WWE website, I believe this is what it's called. Graham Cawthon appeared on the show back in 2015 in the 18th episode. Greg Oliver. Formerly now of Slam Wrestling. This is one of the only shows that has disappeared from the archives, not for any reason other than I overwrote the file name with a different number. And I realized that when I was doing this breakout here over the last couple of months, I was like, oh, it kills me. I hate the fact, even though it's not one that people are going to go back to a lot, but it still drives me crazy that I still don't have that. So that is that. Guy Evans, a talented author. We've had him on a few times, been three. Holt McCallany, yes, actor Holt McCallany of The Iron Claw and Mindhunter. That was a fun one to do. That was another one of the fun things I always remember about the show, is being able to get some of those talents when they're on press tours, or that was how I got Cashflow and Holt. And that was a lot of fun. That, again, made this whole ride worth it. Ian Carrier, the website, was on here. Ibu was on here once. That was in 2024. I would love to have him on again, except he didn't ever return my DMs. So he said he had a great time. I think when he put a tweet out that he finally got on the website, people thought that he had joined our website. And I don't know. I would love to talk to him as part of that Year in Review series every year. But sometimes, you know, people just think he's got a ton of stuff going on. He's got his own podcast now, and he's doing great. So good for him. Jack Encarnacio. Jack Farmer, a friend of the website, has been the past two Year in Review series. He's appeared. So good guy there. Talked about the Lapse Fan. Those guys appeared four times. James Lynch. Yeah, that's right. James, and for his YouTube page, longtime media member, he and I talked last July. Huh. He's a good guy, a really good guy. You can find him on YouTube. Jason Cruz, formerly of MMA Payout, appeared three times. If you're following his account on Twitter, I wouldn't. I don't know what happened. He got hacked, but I believe he's on Blue Sky. Jason's here. I had completely forgot about this. He was the director of the Andre the Giant documentary. And I talked to him back in March 2018 about that. That was a great conversation. That one I may revive at some point too. Jason Powell, Jay Reddick of the Orlando Sentinel, I believe. We talked about UFC down there. JD Drake, that was a great one. Very underrated wrestler and has been for a long time. Jeff Wagenheim, if you're a former MMA fan, you'll remember this. You remember Jeff, he was on the MMA beat a lot, and he was with ESPN. I think he might still be there as an editor. I don't know. But he's in Western Mass, and so not too far away from me, relatively. But Jeff was always a good guy, and we talk a lot about the – we talked about a lot this time when – how things have changed in the MMA media space. Jeff Wagenheim not being a central part of it is a that's a good indicator. Speaking of Jeremy Botter, we talked about Jesse. Jim Genia. Yeah, Jim was a – he is really into the underground MMA scene in New York City. It's crazy. I think he might have gotten fights himself. I don't know. I think I unfollowed him on Twitter a long time ago, but he just seems very obsessed with this underground fight scene in New York. It's crazy. Jimmy Smith, of course, he used to be an MMA announcer for Bellator and also for WWE as well. John Nash, I mentioned, John Pollock. Let's see, Joe Lucia. I don't know. I honestly cannot remember who Joe Lucia is. He appeared on the 100th episode with John and Andrew Buckholz. And that is, I don't know, with John Alba. John Anik appeared back in the show back in June 2016. Talk about UFC 199. The other John Jones, this was a fun one, right? So this was back in 2017. John, not the John Jones, but a guy that owns a John Jones Twitter handle. And he became kind of this Twitter celebrity back then because everyone was tagging him on stuff when everything was going on with John Jones, the latest thing that was going on with John Jones at the time. And so I asked him if he wanted to come on to talk about that experience. And he mentioned there's a Daniel Cormier as well that gets the same, basically got the same shit. And I asked that guy to come on. He declined. But the actual John Jones, the other John Jones appeared. That was a lot of fun back in 2017. Jonathan Snowden, a very talented writer. Talked to him twice in the show. He had a great book on Ken Shamrock we chatted about. He's got a book on pride he's working on, other stuff. Give him a follow. He also has, I believe it's a Substack, one of those. You can find him on Twitter. He is a very, very talented guy and someone that deserves a lot more credit. Jordan Breen, the late Jordan Breen, we talked about him a lot last year with his passing. He was actually on this episode, on the show back in December 2015. Josh Barnett, that was a fun interview. We did two talks. He was always open and honest and someone I always respected a lot. Oh, we got Josh Gross here. So Josh is, of course, he was an old school MMA media member, SI, and talk about those early days and all that. He was someone that always really enjoyed talking to. He wrote the book about Ali and Inoki. That was one of the many things that we chat about. Justin Barrasso appeared, Carl Stern on this very show. We talked about the not so beef. That was, he had taken offense to kind of just not me, not including his show in a just kind of this blurb, and I also didn't include my show in it. I was just writing something out to get something really quick, and he took really offenses and did like this rap and included my name and kind of called me out. And so I said, let's have some fun with it, and we did that. We talked about it on the show, and that Carl is a great guy and somebody that is so he is so dedicated to his craft, man. Like his focus on the Pioneer era, he does these books in history, like. I appreciate that. I appreciate that hustle and that dedication to that. That's a good stuff. Kate Elizabeth, Kevin Paul DuPont, a Boston Globe. Is he still with the Globe or the Herald? We talked about the first time UFC came to Boston, his experience as a first-time MMA attendee. That was fun. Lance Storm appeared once in a show. Lee Daly, who also wrote a Pride book. We talked about him in November 2018. Luke Thomas, that was a fun interview, one that I think I would have... As I look back at it, one of the comments was made that it was more like it was kind of moving to the next question rather than kind of digging into some of the stuff that he talked about. That's 100% accurate. And if I had the chance to adjust it, I would have done that. It was one of those cases where you finally have someone you've always wanted to talk to and you kind of want to get the things that are on top of your mind. So that was more of an interview than a conversation. Had we gone like a second hour or even like another half an hour, I think we would have got kind of where I was happy with it. I'm glad I had him on. It was an impetus for the show without even knowing it. But if I had to do that over again, I'd make some adjustments. Mark Raimondi, Mark Henry. Yes, we talked to him last, last February, almost a year ago, just over a year ago, as we're talking to you now, talked about All Caribbean Wrestling. Mark LaMonica, another New York MMA scribe, Martin Dickinson, he had written a comment. I think he wrote a column about TNA and Kenny Omega back in 2021. He was a one-timer. Matt Farmer of Defy, friend of the website. Michael Chiesa, we chatted back in 2015. Michael Fidel, that name sounds familiar. I do not remember who that is. Michael Weber, that was a good one. That was about Fight TV. He worked for Fight TV. And we kind of just got in the weeds about the Fight TV, where it felt in the pro wrestling space and MMA space. And that was kind of a really insightful conversation. This one I forgot. Michael Bisping and Chael Sonnen. These two guys were on, not at the same time, but separate interviews. This was back in March 2016. And they were talking about this thing called Your Fight. This is the show that also Kurt Angle and Rey Mysterio wrestled the 2 out of 3 falls match. This is one of those things where, I mean, this is almost 10 years ago at this point. It's maybe worth a retrospective. But it just shows how much different things are now, back then. I may dig that one up again and do something like that for the website. It might be a lot of fun. Mike Bond, Mike Chiappetta, old school MMA writer and someone that's moved on. Mike Della Camera, columnist for this website, does the AEW previews. He appeared in the show 3 times. Mike Gilbert, friend of the show and someone that and actually said how much I helped his career, which didn't exist at that point in terms of the pro wrestling space. I think about that every time I see his name and how much that meant to me that he said that. People don't have to admit when they get help from other people, or people may have been, I don't know, inspirations or something like that, or just whatever it is, that meant a lot to me. He said that. So I always think about that with Mike Gilbert. Mike Jackson was the guy that fought CM Punk. And so he appeared on the show twice. One of the guys that fought CM Punk. This is the first, his first opponent, I believe. So he appeared in the show, and he also appeared on a second show, in the same show that Mark Raimondi made an appearance on. And I think, I don't remember what Punk was doing at that point. Maybe it was a second fight or something. I'm not sure. Mike Sempervivi. Yes, Mike Sempervivi appeared twice on the show. Nathan McCarter. Well, I do not remember who that is. I'm sorry. Back in 2018, Nick Baldwin, young prodigy, was actually suggested to me by Paul Fontaine. So he came on. That was back in 2018. Oliver Kopp, formerly of Tough Talk. We talked all about his time here at the website. That was back in July 2020, right in the thick of COVID. And I wanted to get on Mike Sawyer at some point. I think I connected with him a little bit. We just could never make it happen. But that would have been a fun one to have. If he was interested. I cannot remember if he was or not. Patrick Wyman, this is someone that came up in the Luke Thomas interview. He's like completely out of the MMA media space, but he is now this talking about like civilization and history and all this stuff. He's got a massive following. It is crazy. I can't say I broke him here, but I had him early, so we'll take that. Kevin Ioli, of course, you all remember him. MMA media member, now retired, Paul Fontaine. Prince Nana, that was fun. Pro Wrestling Tees. I did an interview all about the background of Pro Wrestling Tees, and that was a love. I always like to do those, kind of understand the periphery of the business. Randy Carver, who is a owner and booker of Limitless Wrestling up in Maine, talked to him back in December 2018. Reed Kuhn of MMA Analytics. Is that his website? It might be. I see him every once in a while. He eats a lot of fancy steaks. I think he's always traveling somewhere, but Reed Kuhn, I can't remember what the website is, but we talked way back in 2016. Rich Van, of course, Rich Craich, Rich Palladino, indie ring announcer, always hardworking. And that was a good talk last year. Rich Stambolian of the Map Men, speaking of Andrew Zarin, Richard Deitch. Yes, Richard Deitch, a sports media reporter extraordinaire. We chatted, Roots of Fight. I got that was actually the worst audio interview that I ever had was Roots of Fight, and something happened in was editing after, or the microphone or something like that. The guy was driving. I don't know. That's a one you always remember, these little ones that screwed up, but that was the one I wish I could, one of the ones I wish I could have back and redo again. But the history of Roots of Fight and all that stuff, I haven't listened that back, but I think it's there. Ryan Glassbeagle, now of Front Office Sports, a media reporter. Sports area reporter. He's been on here twice. He's been a few different places. Ryan McKinnell. He is now out of the business. He was a Sirius XM MMA host and so on. He has completely fallen out of love with the business. Sam Kaplan, former Bellator booker. He and I talked twice 2015 and then 2017, I believe. Now he is out of the business. Scott D'Amore, of course, that was a great conversation about TNA. Scott E. Edwards, Japanese wrestling expert extraordinaire, focuses on Stardom a lot. And yeah, I think he's doing stuff, Fightful, ton of stuff on YouTube and all over the place. Scott E. Edwards, yes, that was a fun guy. Also Massachusetts guy as well. Sean Grandy, Celtics announcer, talked about it, but he's also a Bellator MMA announcer. Sean Ross Sapp, of course, Fightful. That was a fun conversation. That's another thing too. I always like to talk to people from other websites, even if they were like considered competitors. All right, Sean Sheehan, and he is a Irish MMA expert. I can't remember the name of his website. A big Barstool fan, big Kirk Minahan show fan. We talked back about Connor. We got to talk about Connor. That was back in September 2018. Shaheen Al-Shadi talked twice. He's a very talented guy. Talked a lot about the business and so on. That was he's now with Uncrowned, the Aerial site as well. Spencer Kite. Steve Macklin. That was a fun talk. Of course, of TNA. Steve Morocco, longtime MMA reporter. We talked about his feature on Spencer Fisher and the problems that he was dealing with post-fighting. That was an excellent article. That was back in 2021. Swerve Strickland, that was back in May 2022. He had just been in AEW a while, and I wanted to get him early because I thought big things were ahead, and big things were ahead. The Butcher, Andy Williams, that was a fun talk. TJ DeSantis, former Sure Dog guy, does a ton of MMA broadcasting or there's like a lot of like jujitsu stuff, a lot of UFC Fight Pass stuff. Todd Grisham, chatted with him last year, of course, formerly WBA, WWA. What does that mean? Formerly of WWE, does some work with Glory Kickboxing now and also boxing, a ton of boxing with DAZN. Tom Gerbasi, the late Tom Gerbasi, who passed away last year. We had a fun talk, a follow-up to the Mayweather and McGregor boxing match from a long time ago. The late Tom Gerbasi, that was a good talk, also a friend of the site. Tom Lawler, speaking of, appeared in this show back in, he was my ninth guest back in 2015. Trevor Dame, of course, a press conference recapper extraordinaire, also is through the years, ROH Retrospective podcast. Tyson Chartier, who is an MMA trainer, coach, I don't want to talk about that, that life. Warren Hayes, he was someone I got to know through Jesse Collings. And we chatted twice in the year review series. And finally, Zach Patterson, the diamond, that was a fun conversation back just over a year ago. And I still think good things are ahead for him. He's going to get more exposure in the U.S. And I think he'll be someone you're hearing about a lot. So that is it. That is all the recap of all the guests. I thank you for sticking around for that. Pretty fun taking that walk down memory lane. I think that is about it. So I am not done podcasting. I am done doing this show. And what happens next, I don't know. I have plenty of ideas, including some I was working on last night as I'm recording this. And I'm always jotting down ideas. And I think there will be any MMA and UFC, or sorry, it could be UFC space, I guess. UFC adjacent, put it that way. And the pro wrestling space. I don't think they're going to have end dates. So it's going to be kind of focusing on a specific topic, series of events, or so on and so forth. So it's not going to be a endless podcast like, you know, most that are out there now. So I'm kind of playing around with some of that. A lot, of course, are guest dependent, but I think kind of the stuff I'm working on is different. I also really like the audio documentary style that John Pollock does for some stuff on their site. I've had a few ideas for a while, including one I think could be really good. No one ever says their ideas are going to be bad, but I think this one could be good, but it takes a lot of time. So I'm just kind of thinking through some stuff and then, and of course I'll be here. I'll be still filling in for Andrew Zarian, a Wrestling Observer Live some Sundays. Last year I did the whole summer because he just had to take time off. So we'll see. I don't think that'll happen this summer, which is fine. But I assume, you know, a couple films a month or once every couple months or something. We'll see. No big deal. So you'll hear my name and my voice again. Hopefully it won't be forgotten, just like John Cena was, right? And I think that's it. And I want to leave this quote. I actually listened to that Marc Maron podcast I was referencing earlier. I listened to his penultimate show, which is the one we kind of said goodbye to his audience, like 35 minutes. So I've listened to one Marc Maron interview in my life, and that was with Tony Khan. and Tony. That was the only one I listened to. And this one, it was okay. You know, it was someone saying goodbye. I'm always kind of fascinated with closure and how people kind of wrap things up. And this is a quote when he first announced he was leaving. He said, "We are utterly satisfied with the work we've done. We've done great work. That doesn't mean I'm never going to do something like this again. Doesn't mean I'll never have talks like I do here or some kind of podcast at some point in time. But for now, we're just wrapping things up. It's okay. It's okay to end things, and it's okay to start some other chapter in your life." And I agree with that wholeheartedly. And I need to thank, obviously, all the guests, and most importantly, to thank you. I don't know who you are. Some people I do, but I don't know. And I think when you put things out there, any type of art, any type of writing, any type of anything, creative endeavor, you hope that someone takes it in. They may not have to like it, but if they appreciate it and at least give you the time, that's all you can ask for. I was thinking today as I was driving home, I thought a lot about when I was in college writing for the school paper, and the paper would come out, it was three times a week, and it came out in the afternoons. And before classes, I would see people reading it. Sometimes I would see them reading a column I wrote or something. And I was just so curious what they thought, but it was just that rush and that feeling. And as time has gone on with kind of how content is, it's a lot different than it was in the late 90s when that was happening. By the way, there's so much content. It is so hard. It is so hard to get to that, to have that feeling again, right? And a lot of these, you know, some of these, I would definitely say hit that for me. And I always just want to do something different. And I think I achieved that. And that was really the most important thing, the goal. But the most important part is you. As a kind of a roundabout way of getting to that is you listening. And I say this all the time on, I believe, every single podcast I do, for this one at least. And I wish other people would do so as well, is thank you for listening. Again, you have a lot of choices in your podcast day. I have a lot of choices in my podcast day. We've all dropped shows. I'm sure people have dropped this one before, but if you stuck with me in any form, if you listen to every show, if you've listened to any shows at all, I greatly thank you for that time and appreciate it. And more than you know, that was an honor to do that. And if someone gets some entertainment out of this, learned something from it, or just, you know, took away from their day and made things better, or they could avoid something, that's great. That's really all I can ask for. You have a lot of choice in your podcast day. I greatly appreciate the time you spend with me or any of the fine podcast hosts here at WrestlingObserver.com. My name is Josh Nason. This has been Josh Nason's Punch Out. And for the final time, unless Taz wants to talk, that's the only person I'll come back for. Well, if The Rock wants to or something. But Taz was my, I should have mentioned this earlier, Taz was my white whale. I tried to get him once and was not able to do it. Taz is my white whale. If I can talk to him for an hour, I'll even take 45 minutes, then I'll come back for that. But until that time, and until next time, thank you very much, and insert catchphrase here.